You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's sliesoffice.com. Joining me today, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Brother, I hope you had a good vacation out in California and a Merry Christmas.
I had a very fine travel, but I'm delighted to be back in the great state of Wisconsin.
Really? Because I don't say that anymore. I love the people of Dane and Milwaukee County and up there by Superior, Eau Claire, La Crosse. But I'm not feeling a whole lot of love for the rest of the state, John.
Getting shaky.
Yeah. It's really shaky.
Getting shaky. I'll tell you, the fact of the matter is that even in the most retrograde location, there are people who are doing fine, doing right. Good folks, and we have a certain responsibility to shore them up and be at their side. I think of the folks up, earlier this year I was up in Sturgeon Bay, did a big event with all the progressives up there, and cannot tell you, this is before the primary, cannot tell you how enthusiastic people were for Bernie Sanders, right? And for, all kinds of progressive politics. And, look, they were, I think, let down in a lot of ways by their party. Most of them are Democrats, and by politics in general. But I'm not going to give up on them, right? I think those folks out there.
Hell, some of the most enthusiastic progressives in the state live in Waukesha County.
That's exactly my point. And so our duty is to, back them up. But also to figure out how to create a politics in Wisconsin that responds to where I think the vast majority of people in this state are. Remember, I was just going over to take it on the national level and bring it back down to the state. Trump got 46% of the vote for president. Paul Ryan and Republicans got a little under 49%. Well under a majority, in popular vote for House of Representatives. In the Senate races, remember, Senate's going to be critical going into the 2017, political process. In Senate races, Republican candidates only got around 42% of the vote nationally, right? So these folks have no mandate, no mandate at all. And I would argue that in Wisconsin as well, there are claims to a mandate are rooted in districting of our legislature in ways that the courts have said are constitutionally flawed, in voter suppression, in manipulating the electoral process, in flooding money into the political process in ways that historically would not have been allowed. And so before we blame the people, I think we really ought to take a serious look at the folks at the top who manipulated.
Well, I agree with everything you just said, but I keep waiting for...
However,
I have been waiting for a long time now for independents and people that are just fair. They're not necessarily ideologically driven to one strong point or the other. They're kind of a mixed bag. I've been waiting for them to come as the cavalry to set things straight out of a sense of propriety and decency and fairness. And John, I keep waiting for the cavalry, and someday maybe they'll come.
Get a little cold out on the hill.
But it's getting real. It's getting real, 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 real cold. Kind of feels like I'm by a pipeline in North Dakota.
Well, here's the really bad news. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has decided, as we've noted, that it will be harder to tell the people what's going on. Right.
Well, you read my mind. That was our next conversation. 5-4. A 5-2 decision. The state Supreme Court decided that Brad Schimmel's racist tapes will remain secret.
Well, that's putting it politely. And, you know, here's the critical thing about that decision. If you pause for a second, get out of the stupid, empty-headed partisanship and the vapid ideology, right? You understand that the whole Wisconsin experiment, which is an experiment in better governance than the rest of the country, we have always presumed that we would be better, that we'd set higher standards, that we would, you know, seek to be, you know, the laboratory of democracy for the whole United States. That experiment was always rooted in the idea that power would extend from the people, that the great mass of people had more common sense than, I don't know, Scott Walker and Scott Fitzgerald. If that experiment is to work, however, the people have to have information. They have to. You have to have open meetings. You have to have open records. You have to have a genuine right to know. You know, freedom of information. And when the state Supreme Court of Wisconsin, on behalf of an elected official, who, by the way, is charged with defending our right to know, but on behalf of an elected official, shuts down access to basic information about what that official does in his or her official capacity, you aren't just, you know, taking a little partisan step, oh, you know, Schimmel got a little protection there. You are knocking the foundations out from the whole of this Wisconsin experiment. Because if the people don't get to know what's going on, then how can they possibly, you know, as you suggest, ride to the rescue as a cavalry?
It's a serious issue. It's really remarkable because I know a lot of people that you went to Marquette. I know a lot of people that went to Marquette and got a great education. It's a wonderfully diverse school. But evidently, Rebecca Bradley was so busy writing homophobic screeds for the newspaper that she wasn't paying attention in civics class and decided that a political party, ready for this now, a political party's purposes were partisan, therefore the rest of the public should be in the dark when it comes to these training tapes of the Department of Justice by then District Attorney Brad Schimmel. You know, she is not just getting criticism from the left on her statement regarding that. She is getting universal condemnation. As a matter of fact, I think people kind of are in a state of shock that she's that stupid.
Well, look at this. This is a really serious issue. Because it's not just the, you know, absolute ignorance of the law that's on display there. I mean, scorching, unimaginable ignorance of the law, which, by the way, is something that's not the first time that surfaced with that particular justice. But aside from the scorching ignorance of the law, something that you get kicked out of a pre-law course for such imagining, there's also something that goes much deeper. In Wisconsin, this better state, historically better state, our understanding of laws as regards the political process and governance was that the people always came first. They were far more important than the parties and partisanship. Remember, when we led the nation in creating open primaries, our concept was that as a state, we didn't care about political parties. What we cared about was that in whatever primary somebody wanted to vote, that citizens had the right to define the direction of political parties, right? We moved the power back down to the people. We took it away from the party bosses. We didn't want to be a machine state. We didn't want to be a, you know, hyper-partisan state. We wanted to be a state where governance, you know, hopefully sought to achieve some good. And for her to take the stance that she has, she's actually not just insulting the law. She is also insulting every Wisconsin tradition understood by liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans.
You know, this is going to sound really strange, but back in the early 1970s, my aunt and uncle were taking me, they were showing me America, and then they got married in Maryland right off a military base, and they would always dine at one of those classic railroad car looking-ish diners. The Edgewood Diner in Edgewood, Maryland.
Like it. Yeah.
Okay. And I really thought it was cool, and I had a postcard from it, and I still think diners are the coolest thing in the world. Anyway, we get there in 1972. It was torn down. It was gone. This little piece of Edgewood history is gone, right? You know what sits there today?
McDonald's?
Exactly.
Of course.
Now, do you know why I bring this up in the context of this conversation?
I have a sense of where you're headed here.
Okay. I don't think Wisconsin's Wisconsin anymore. I don't think the people that live in wide swatches of the state have any historical understanding or concept of what this very special state was. I don't think they have any concept of it, John, and I don't think they're the slightest bit interested.
There's a danger of that.
Yeah.
That it is not merely Wisconsin. I think it's national.
Yes.
And so, look, this is, I'll say something that you may find a little strange. This isn't on the people, and this is not on Scott Walker, and, you know, where did he learn about, you know, the Wisconsin ideal? At some class in Iowa or someplace? You know, it's not on the Koch brothers from Kansas. It's not on, you know, all these people for whom Wisconsin is just a political playground, right? The understanding of the Wisconsin experiment has historically been maintained by progressives. It has been the duty of progressive Republicans, then members of the Independent Progressive Party, then progressives who went into the Democratic Party, and some of their Republican allies for many, many years, to maintain this experiment, to maintain this faith in a higher ideal. The failure has been in the current Democratic Party. The failure has been with current Democratic leaders, and because you do have to maintain that education, that sense of purpose, that faith. And they have done it. They've done a lousy, lousy, by and large, there are individuals who stand out, but by and large, they've done a lousy job of it. And I'll tell you something from being in California recently. This is fascinating. Californians are now really excited that they stand out from the rest of the country, that they didn't vote for Trump, that they will have different policies, that Jerry Brown will actually seek to address climate change, you know, from a state level, working with other states and even with provinces in Canada and other parts of the world. And so they have a sense of pride in their distinction. What Scott Walker did in his core focus was to take away any sense of pride in Wisconsin, take away any sense of, you know, the distinction that this state might have and say, well, our goal is to be just like everybody else.
Yes, but he ended global warming in the state. You got to give him credit for that.
He erased it altogether. But all I'm saying is the duty isn't on Walker. He's a political hack, right? Predictable political hack. The duty is on the folks who should have been, you know, for a very long time, setting that higher standard. And I will give you a core place to look at it. When Democrats had universal control, right, in recent years, not that long ago, instead of acting as, you know, old-school, passionate Wisconsin reformers and addressing issues and fixing that which was dysfunctional, really going hardcore for, you know, fair drawing of district lines, locking that in. Why not do a constitutional amendment that says, you know, over two legislative cycles and then goes to the voters, that says that district lines for the state assembly and state legislature will be always drawn on the basis of competitiveness, fairness, by an independent commission, something, you know, similar to what we see in some other states. They didn't do that, Sly. They played hack politics.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, and then all the things you are saying are true. But California has an advantage of some demographics that are changing that really, you can almost predict which states are going in different directions. You know, for instance, Colorado used to be a far more Republican state than Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
But the demographics have changed, and that makes it possible for someone who's as uninspiring and uninteresting as Michael Bennett to remain in the United States Senate. I'm sorry.
I'm with you on that.
All right.
Let me echo that.
You know. Which is fine, better him than the alternative, but you get my point.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, but you see, Sly, here's one thing about...
Can't we get some Hispanics to move to Wisconsin?
They are. They're coming.
Not at the rate we need them.
I agree. But here's one way to understand. Politics is about looking, not just looking at the, you know, landscape you're in and figuring out what your excuse is, right? Maybe if you're, you know, the Republican Party in Massachusetts or the Democratic Party in Wyoming, you may operate from that standpoint, right? That, you know, the best we can come up with is a good new excuse.
And by the way, John is actually been invited by Liz Cheney to be at her swearing in.
Obviously, I want to champion the Cheneys at all levels. I have a long-term commitment to their to examining their approach to governance. But what I'm saying is that in states where there is any history of competitiveness or any possibility of competitiveness, and frankly, I'm not even going to take Massachusetts and Wyoming off those lists. I think they can be. The way that you do politics is you look at the landscape that exists. You look at the barriers, the challenges, the realities, and you figure out how to win in that, right? You don't, you know, say, oh, well, it's over, it's undoable, blah, blah, blah. And my problem at this point with the approach, frankly, of an awful lot of Democrats in Wisconsin is that instead of looking at the landscape in Wisconsin, looking at, you know, what they've got in front of them, they still too frequently go to national sources, right? They say, oh, well, what's the, you know, official line on this? What are we supposed to talk about this time? And what we've lost in Wisconsin is a coherent Wisconsin-based progressivism that says we're not all that concerned about what folks are saying at the national level, and to really distinguish that and build that out. I'll give you a good example. In 1968, Richard Nixon carried Wisconsin, right? But Gaylord Nelson was easily reelected to the U.S. Senate against a serious opponent. In 1972, Nixon carried Wisconsin again pretty easily, and yet Democrats had significant advances politically in the state. You know what I'm saying? It's that we used to have a sense of ourselves as something distinct, and if the National Democratic Party wasn't doing all that good a job, right, for instance, as an example, Wisconsin Democrats could still do well. You also had a sense in the Republican Party, there was a sense of pride in being, you know, distinct and of this place rather than just being an extension of some, you know, office in Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah, well, you kind of sound like the 21 Pilots song, Stressed Out. I wish we could go back in time to the good old days.
Well, you know, John Kasich is the guy who championed that band. So there you go. But anyway, I just think it's not about going back to the good old days. It is actually looking at the current circumstance and figuring out how to go forward. And I don't think that there's enough of that going on. And I think that as the Democratic Party chooses its leadership in the coming weeks and months in this state, just, you know, we could talk about the Republican Party just as much here, but as an opposition party, as they figure out how they're going to do this, they really, really, really have to pull the brake and say, I mean, at what point, Sly, do you acknowledge that it's not working? Right? I mean, seriously, after all these election cycles and all these setbacks, do you know where, I was looking at this the other day, do you know where we're at politically in Wisconsin? We have literally gotten ourselves back, and I didn't think this was possible, to a situation, a status for the Democrats in this state that is pre-Fred Risser.
Fred Risser was elected to the state assembly in 1956. All right, let me move to our next topic here. Donald Trump. Tommy Thompson met with Donald Trump the other day, and the next guest was, you know who the next guest was after Tommy Thompson?
I do not know Tommy.
Don King.
You know, boy, if Tommy and Don passed in the hallway, A, I want the photograph, and B, Tommy is great and totally defensible in every way that I can imagine, but Don King won that day. Do you know why? Did you see the press conference or the place where Trump was talking to the cameras and he was saying some stuff, and Don King was in the room and kept interrupting Trump and yelling, "Make America great again."
Oh yeah.
It was come on.
It was a great jacket. I love the flags he was wearing. Well, he got away with it because he was wearing a big Trump for President button.
But I didn't even, when you initially see it, you're like, "Whoa, there's somebody yelling in the room." And then you realize Don King. Wow. That guy, he is a master showman. Totally. I think there's a role for him in the Trump administration.
I want to know, when's the last time a U.S. president proudly stood next to someone who'd been convicted of manslaughter?
Not recently. not certainly in the last 8 years that I know of.
Will you check on that, please?
I will. But I will tell you, Tommy meeting with Trump is important. Two reasons. Number one, Trump still has some significant appointments to make. And keep an eye on that. Don't rule out the possibility that Tommy Thompson could end up in this administration. He does not want it. I don't think he's seeking it, but it's just an interesting dynamic. Also, it is important to understand that Tommy Thompson is one of those people who stood up for Trump, you know, at a critical point in the campaign, appeared at rallies and things like that. And I think that Tommy will have influence with this administration, whether you like that or not, dislike it or not, that I think is a reality.
So the president has taken action against Russia, and Donald Trump, the night before the president took the action, said it's time to get on with our lives, that these computers are really complicated things.
But they
played a montage of Donald Trump's comments about Russia over the last year.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm more convinced than ever?
What?
There's only one explanation for this. Do you know what it is? They got something on the guy. There is no other possible explanation.
Well, you're skeptic. You know, some of your folks say that what you're saying is potentially an answer, but there might actually be another one that relates to it, and that is that when Trump got at several points in serious financial trouble and then seemed to bounce back so very, very well, it's interesting. Let us just say that the really cynical folks suggest that we still don't know an awfully lot about Trump's business empire.
Well, my supposition and yours are not mutually exclusive.
I realize that. I do realize that exactly. And all I'm saying is that this is part of why the vetting of Trump during the campaign was such a big deal. And because he was never really taken seriously, there are people who said, you got to release your tax return, stuff like this. You know, and certainly some of the Washington Post reporting has been fantastic, but overall, the guy kind of waltzed through 2016. And this is a very interesting thing. Imagine this. This ought to be the biggest news story, maybe even of the year, okay? President Obama, in response to a pretty significant amount of information, a lot of, you know, reports from his intelligence folks and others, takes major steps against the Russians. I mean, we're really doing things like that, stuff that you haven't seen in modern times, right, as a real pushback against Russian presence in the U.S. and spying, frankly, or accusations of spying. That takes these basic steps, throws bunches of diplomats out, gives them a very short amount of time to get out of the country, all that stuff like that. The biggest news story is not that. It is Putin's response. And Putin says, I'm not going to throw any American diplomats out or shut down anything. You know, we obviously have probably the same level of awareness of things going on here that Americans have, of things going on there. I'm not going to do it because I can wait till Trump's president. I mean, think about that.
Oh, no. It's
completely dismissing what would historically have been a massive diplomatic tug of war. He said, not even going to think about it. I'm going to the New Year's party because in 20 days, my man Trump is going to be president.
I mean, if he'd really want to hurt us, he would have cut off our vodka. That
our vodka and or variety of other connections. But you understand what I'm saying? We ought to pause and think about that.
No, it's chilling.
Very interesting response.
It's chilling. It's amazing. And Kellyanne Conway was amazing. You know, she's one of the great contortionists of all time. She found a way to criticize Barack Obama for making these moves against Russia, saying that she took one little kernel where somebody said that Barack Obama did this to box Donald Trump in, and she made it sound as though Barack Obama was doing that for pure political reasons.
But with all due respect, also even people who are supporting, and by the way, I'm, you know, look, as regards to this whole Russian thing, I think there's a lot, you know, I think there's stuff to examine, stuff to investigate without a doubt. But I also, you know, think that, you know, now we're getting into the zone where people are kind of riding all their agendas into this, right? And certainly that includes folks like John McCain, folks like Lindsey Graham. But here's the interesting thing. McCain and Graham essentially supporting what the president's doing, but yet criticizing Obama because he said, oh, he didn't do it soon enough. Right? Well, with all due respect, I mean, where is this basic concept of, you know, okay, the president of the United States is dealing on the international stage in some pretty complicated, pretty serious stuff. And it certainly looks like just about everybody's out there with their own political agenda, right?
Sure
and trying
does.
To hide it for something.
It sure does. Oh, finally today, I have a wish for the president as he pardons people or commutes sentences.
Yes.
You know who I really want to see him commute the sentence of?
It's a long list. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he's Serbian. He's a neighbor. He's a Serbian, and he's our neighbor.
I'm blanking, man. Tell me.
Rod Blagojevich.
Oh, he's not Serbian. He's Serbian-American.
Okay, Serbian-American.
I think, yeah, I hear you want Blagojevich off the hook. I thought, you know, there's a lot of Serbians.
He got a terribly unfair sentence.
It is pretty rough with Blagojevich. I'm willing. Look, there's actually quite a few people I think could get pardons. You know, like you run down the list. I happen to begin with Snowden, to be blunt, and I think that Snowden should get the pardon. I think Blagojevich should. But with all due respect, there's some Native Americans that they've had in jail, you know, for decades for, you know, rising up and objecting to U.S. policies on things. We have an awful lot of people who are either jailed or facing, you know, ongoing criminal or legal challenges that I think it would be very appropriate for a president to pause and say, hold it, you know, you've done your time. There were real questions about what was done to you. And all I'll remind you of, slide, just a little historical note here. In 1921, on December 25th, just about 95 years ago, this week, President Warren Harding pardoned Eugene Victor Debs, the leader of the American Socialist Party, who was sitting in jail because horrible President Woodrow Wilson had gone after Debs for being an opponent of World War One. And Warren Harding pardoned Debs, who had run against Harding in the 1920 election, pardoned him on Christmas Day and said, you know, jump on that train, head home to Terre Haute, Indiana, but on your way, route that train through Washington, D.C., because I want to have a little sit-down with you at the White House on December 26th. And Debs went to the White House 95 years ago, and Harding greeted him and said, you know, damn, I've heard so much about you. It's a pleasure to meet you. Come on in. And with all due respect, I think that was one of the great grace notes in American politics. Warren Harding, who doesn't get much credit from anybody, actually did exactly the right thing in issuing a pardon to somebody who was prosecuted in jail for
and we're going to leave it right there because let's leave on a positive note for 2016. All right.
Very good. Thanks, bro.
Happy New Year, brother.
Sly's Office.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.